back on Downtown. It is 4:30 on a Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt here with you for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. And we are joined by a gentleman who is an assistant professor of visual and sound media at Seton Hall University and the author of a terrific new book called Front Office Fantasies, The Rise of Managerial Sports Media. We're happy to be joined by Brandon Buehler. Brandon, thanks so much for being with us again.
Oh, yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, what an interesting book this is. We have talked about this book more in the last few weeks than I think any book we've had on the segment in some time. What got you inspired to do the tremendous research you did into putting this all together?
Well, I would say that this book really started just out of my own sports fandom. Growing up, for whatever reason, I often just found myself fascinated with in video games and consuming sports media. I just found myself often fascinated with sports media that put you in the position of an executive, of a general manager. So as a kid, I played a lot of different video games that let you imagine you were drafting teams and trading players. And very similarly, the NFL and NBA drafts were always really big events on my kind of youth sporting calendar. And so just over the past several years, I found myself just really wanting to better understand why are there so many of these sports media programs, sports media techs that are so interested in management, and not only where do they come from, but also how do they encourage us to think about sport? What did that really do to my young sport fan mind in terms of often approaching sport like I was vicariously managing the teams I was a fan of? And so that was really, it really just came out of my own kind of background. I wanted to understand more about, where that came from, because I didn't fully understand it for myself. Why was I so interested in, like, if I picked up a football video game, why was I so much more interested in these modes that just let me draft the teams rather than, playing the games themselves? And so that just started a long research project into, where did these managerial modes come from? Where are these managerial sports media texts come from, and what do they have to say about sport?
And it's such a sea change too, that we've gone from kids idolizing and wanting to be the athletes they watch to saying, boy, someday I could be Brian Cashman or maybe Mel Kiper Jr.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you can just sense this all around sports fandom, that there's so much of the entry point for so many people is in discussions, just entering in that kind of front office suite of thinking about, rather than, what's the pass I would have made, instead thinking about, well, what's the trade I would have made in order to improve the team. And so, yeah, I mean, it was striking to me over, even the time I was working on this project, just how much more, ubiquitous front office executives started to be within, sports television, sports radio, sports podcasting. And to that point, how many of these names, like a Brian Cashman or, more recently, like a Daryl Morey, et cetera, have become kind of household names among sports fans, even though, you don't see them on the field, you don't see them on the court.
Well, you also point out something in the book that we've talked about a lot here, and that is the way that kids are leaving organized sports at a much younger age. There was a time when when kids would play sports all the way through high school, whether they were a star or not. Now we see kids leaving organized sports 11, 12, 13 years of age, and many of them then gravitating to the things that you were talking about because they believe that they could be an executive when they know they can't be a star on the field. That change, I think, is also really something that we're seeing in people, in the change in fandom, as to who gets the blame when the game isn't won.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to that point, the change that we're seeing, it's wrapped up into, broader societal changes in which, the skill set, often that we associate with, the sport executive, it's a lot of kind of what so many people do in their day-to-day lives, whether in their jobs or, at home in their kind of personal lives, managing spreadsheets and doing you know, a lot of kind of computer work, a lot of, you know, even, you know, social media work, you know, that it feels, you know, so much, perhaps for so many, so much more part of their daily lives. And so, you know, perhaps, you know, there's more crossover here than one can imagine, you know, playing sport. And so perhaps, you know, there's a natural connection. And, you know, that's often the association that's made between, you know, maybe people are less interested in playing sports, they're more interested in, you know, increasingly, you know, video games, social media, et cetera. So you can see how all these would converge in terms of really thinking about sport through a managerial lens, through that executive mindset.
How much has the Sloan Conference got to do with this change? If you could sort of explain what that is. I tried the other day, but I don't think I'll be as good at it as you are.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Sloan Conference has a really interesting role to play in this. So this is the big analytics conference that MIT hosts every year, and it's grown over the last 15 years. It was this really small event that was just in a couple of classrooms at MIT, and now for the past decade, it's, you know, taken over the two Boston Convention Centers, kind of alternating between them, but taken over the Boston Convention kind of facilities and host, you know, thousands of people and people from all over the place. You know, you get their media members, you get executives from teams, you get even, you know, fans, you get a lot of people. And this was interesting for me, a lot of people who aspire to work as a sports executive. It's a lot of groups coming together in that one sort of place. And increasingly, you know, as it's grown to this event where there are thousands of people, it's kind of become untethered from a lot of the discussions that were originally, you know, very statistically focused. And now it's about a lot of big picture discussions of just sports really generally, particularly as a business. But it has an interesting role to play because, you know, I mentioned the growth of that event when it, you know, started as this small event. It was kind of peripheral, you know, and really spoke to that. There was, you know, it was seen initially as this kind of very niche thing to be interested in sports analytics, to be interested in viewing sport through the lens of advanced statistical analysis. But in the wake of Moneyball, in the wake of particularly, you know, more and more teams, you know, kind of adopting those sorts of methodologies and that having more and more of a cultural presence, the profile of Sloan really grew. And then that's really symptomatic then of sport shifting. And then in its wake too, sports media shifting to, you know, increasingly be interested in analytics. But that really speaking to the way that so many of us now think about sport through ways that, you know, initially were really how like executives and managers were approaching sport in this way, kind of in this very quantitative way. And so the fact that Sloan goes from this niche event, particularly to a niche event that, you know, has more and more, you know, in its early years, front office executives attending and people who work in sport, to now something that is a little bit more, you know, resonant culturally, where you'll see people talking about it on ESPN, where you'll see references to it in a lot of just kind of daily sports discourse, you know, it really speaks to the way the lens of sport has more broadly changed with that rise of Sloan in thinking about sport in this very managerial, quantitative, very, what is the statistical, financially kind of forward lens really becoming predominant.
We're talking with Brandon Buehler here on Downtown. Well, obviously games, and I love playing MLB The Show and Out of the Park, and I didn't think at first I would enjoy playing the role of that general manager in building teams, but it can be very addictive there. But also I'm curious, what role has the rise of fantasy sports played in this mindset as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to disentangle, and this is one of the things I mentioned in my book, is that fantasy sports is both part of this phenomenon. You know, it very much is growing at the same time as we see kind of the managerial mode growing across other areas, where we see more and more discussions on sports television of, you know, managerial maneuvers, as we see more discussions in sports radio of managerial maneuvers, as we see sports films focusing on it, on management taking off. So it's happening at the same time. And thus it becomes a little hard to know, is fantasy sports causing this broader interest in management? Is it, you know, really, you know, a cause of, for example, more and more of you know, sports television talk shows, you know, focusing around transactions and drafts, et cetera. Or is fantasy sports, you know, something that follows from that as fans consume more and more of this managerial content in television, radio, et cetera, films? Does that cause them then to want to get involved in fantasy sports? I think it's hard to disentangle all of those. It's really just kind of a reinforcing cycle, I think, where the growth of fantasy sports both feeds and also responds to more broadly the way the managerial lens becomes predominant across radio, television, film, you know, you kind of video games, you name it. So fantasy sports is right there with them. I do think it is a key contributor here, and particularly too, as you have to have the challenge of managing your own fantasy teams, you have to stay, you know, tuned to, for example, like, did a team, you know, trade a player? Did they cut a player? All these sorts of things you have to be aware of if you want to be successful in fantasy. But I also think, you know, that all of those things then prime you also to be more interested in your fantasy team. So I think it is this cyclical relationship that fantasy sports, you know, both causes and then also reflects all those other broader changes. But very much a key piece of the puzzle, because for so many that is such a direct way that they are vicariously managing athletes.
One of our frequent guests on the show, been a longtime friend of the show, Upton Bell, son of Bert Bell, who basically founded the NFL, has said that one of the great sea changes in sports is that the fewer and fewer people in management of football teams are football people. That wealthy people who have no real background in sports buy a team, and then they hire people to run that team. And it's not always somebody with a deep sports background. How does that play into this whole extra layer of management?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really key piece here, and something that, you know, I try to point to as one of the really key kind of background factors that's at work here, is that we've really seen a shift, particularly over the last couple of decades, of, you know, sports has always been big business, but, you know, over the past couple of decades, there's been some changes in terms of who are the business people actually, you know, purchasing the teams. And particularly as we've seen sports team values grow over the last couple of decades with rising media rights deals, that's really it's been a significant change in terms of thinking about sports teams as increasingly more and more of these valuable, you know, basically an asset class here then you see different sorts of people from finance, private equity, et cetera, want to get involved in. And thus you get this shift in terms of ownership that then leads into also, you know, people coming in and putting in place to manage these hugely valuable assets, you know, that are, you know, teams being worth a couple billion dollars, several billion dollars because of those rising media rights deals. But you see then an expansion of management. You see more and more administrators coming in, more executives, and particularly who these, you know, new owners trust to come in and manage their teams are people with a background across other fields that they're familiar with, like management consulting and in the financial industry, you know, pulling people with backgrounds, you know, with MBAs who, you know, have experience in Wall Street, on Wall Street in other sorts of financial sectors. And so that leads to then different ways of thinking about sport. You know, you get, you know, crossover of managerial philosophies that you see also in other industries, where you get then, as we were talking about with the rise of Sloan before, you know, a way of thinking often that's much more quantitative, much more than that keyword of analytics coming up along the way. But then that feeds into all of these, you know, fantasies of management, because you get more and more people coming into sport as executives whose backgrounds are not in professional sport, who don't necessarily have a lot of playing experience, but instead, you know, come up through, you know, a lot of years perhaps of graduate school and then working in other fields coming in, you know, that, you know, seems to feed into some fantasies. And I mentioned talking to people at Sloan who have these fantasies where, you know, they see themselves, they were working in management consulting or pharmaceuticals, biotech, wherever. They see themselves as, you know, maybe I could be that next person who's the executive in sport. It gets a whole kind of different set of fantasies going if you can come into sport without necessarily and take these leadership roles without necessarily having been a super successful athlete. If you can instead, you know, perhaps come to this, you know, just it's kind of out of all of these other fields that draw upon, you know, the as we were talking about before, the kind of daily administrative tasks of white collar work of managing spreadsheets and going through big conference calls, these sorts of things that are more, you know, perhaps broadly familiar, you know, many more people having this as part of their daily life than, you know, have experience playing professional sport.
And one of the byproducts of this emphasis on the management class has to do with the way our sports are covered in the media. And you address this in the book too, that often the emphasis now is not on the work being done by the athletes. If you're watching a Celtics game, the conversation might not be about the work that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are doing, but on the shrewd managerial skills of the usually white executives that are running these teams.
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, there's a huge racial component to this. I mean, several people in the media have, you know, done initial work and kind of pointing out what this tends to do in a lot of these conversations, this discourse around the NBA, for example, is it kind of shifts the stardom away from the athletes, increasingly toward the white men who are the executives on their teams. So, you know, you've had several people in the media point out, you know, it's really, really interesting the way that you've seen this lens. What it inevitably ends up doing is it in the case of the NBA, for instance, you know, de-emphasizes the athletes and shifts that up to the front office, and that's something that, you know, I see happening across not just our conversations and for example television and radio, you know, increasingly centering these, you know, white male executives. But also, if you look, for example, I have a chapter in the book where I look at a number of different films that here we see that kind of managerial mode at work. Films like Moneyball, films like Draft Day, films like Million Dollar Arm, about an agent in that case versus a team executive. But in all those cases, it's, you know, the white male executive here. And so I see that kind of as a legacy out of the sports film, for instance, has long centered. You know, historically, there's a tendency to center white male athletes. And so the kind of shift here that we see happening in the sports film is as the executive class gets more and more attention across sports television, sports, you know, sports radio, podcasting, et cetera, sports films kind of follow in that lead and rehear, heroicize the white male. In this case, through the lens of the front office versus the field and the court and the playing surface.
And when we factor in things like gambling, which is now such a huge part of sports, even more emphasis on analytics and the people who know, hey, who's hurt, who's up, who's down, who might they call up from the minor leagues, and all of that, again, emphasizes less the athlete and more the experts on the media side and the executives on the management side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the discussion of gambling is a huge part of this phenomenon. And one of the things I mentioned in the book even is, you know, there's a lot of crossover here as we talk about the kind of the rise of a kind of a new executive class and that the rise of increasingly the legitimization of within sports media discourse, sports gambling and betting. And you see that at a place like the Sloan Conference, where historically there have been a lot of panels and a lot of discussions and a lot of people there who, you know, they come to analytics by way of sports gambling and sports betting. And so you see those discussions of, for example, advanced statistical analysis of sport, not just in discussions then in a lot of sports radio and television around, you know, what are the latest things that executives are doing, but also, you know, for example, on ESPN, the rise of, you know, new programs that are based around sports gambling, sports betting. You see a lot of those analytics conversations also carrying in over there. There's a very similar quantitative lens. And so it just becomes another space where we see that view of sport reinforced, where, you know, it's in many cases treated as a set of widgets to be optimized.
Well, when you look at the future, we'll ask you one last question here if we can.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going? I mean, are we going into a down a rabbit hole we're not going to come back from, or do you see maybe this is a stage that will work itself out?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, so one of the ways I conclude the book, so I've been really interested recently on studying and researching independent spheres of sports media, so getting outside mainstream sports media and looking at the way that sports, particularly streaming services, have allowed for youth sport, niche sports, minor sports, to really expand their media coverage by way of often, like, for example, they're like devoted high school streaming services, they're devoted streaming services to, I looked at specifically in one article, Ultimate Frisbee. And so one of the things I was interested in, you know, there's these new independent spheres of sports media that are not linked into the mainstream sport infrastructure, that aren't linked into ESPN, that aren't linked into, you know, your big broadcast networks that have historically been such a big part of sports media. And so one of the things I was interested in is, you know, as we look into these independent spaces where you get outside of the commercial imperatives, where you get outside of, you know, the need to be linked into, for example, gambling and betting in the way that increasingly the television networks are, as you get into these other spaces, might we see, you know, different lenses of looking at sport? Might there be different ways of approaching sport that are, you know, less quantitative, less financially oriented, that, you know, can go into some other realms and perhaps challenge some of the ways that we're so increasingly used to now sport being discussed through that managerial lens across a lot of mainstream commercial sport. And one of the things I noticed is even looking at independent, you know, these fledgling sports media services, these streaming video services, you still see that lens there. There's just, you know, that's been such the lens that's been adopted. So you see, for example, you know, the embrace of a very quantitative lens, you know, looking at even the coverage of amateur sports, looking at the coverage of minor sports that exist out of the mainstream, like an Ultimate Frisbee. And so that makes me think that this is going to be with us for a while, that it's become so ubiquitous that even fledgling up-and-coming sports media services that are outside of mainstream sport, even there you see that managerial mode adopted. You know, makes me think that it's going to be with us for the foreseeable future. But, you know, things in sports media can change quickly. So it's hard to predict the future nonetheless.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us. Rich and I both really like this book, and we don't do any books we don't like, but we really did like this one. Front Office Fantasies, The Rise of Managerial Sports Media from the University of Illinois Press by Brandon Bueller. Thank you, Brandon, and I hope we'll be able to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed the conversation, and thank you so much for the kind words about the book.
Brandon Bueller with us here on Sports Lit 101. A quick break. We're back in just a moment on Downtown.
Hi, this is Richard Schiff, and you're listening to Downtown.